This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And then, if you want, we have this tea table right here, tissues, and you can put your drink
and
over there.
And you're welcome to use the headphones, although I'm not going to.
Okay, then I won't. Mm-hmm. I won't ruin the.
It would look weird.
It would look weird. Yeah. It would look weird.
It would either look like I have some sort of super hearing, or mm-hmm. you have a disability.
Yeah, it's you're too loud. I'm sorry. I need to wear.
Yeah. And also. Do you prefer John or Jonathan
John.
Or John Hodgman? I'm not done. Oh, John right. Hodgman or Johnny Hodgman or Johnny Hodge or Johnny H or Johnny T even. I'll give you a Johnny T. What's your middle name?
Kellogg. True story.
What is the story?
That's my middle name.
That's not much, not much of a story. Well, and I know this sounds like fodder for every hacky stand-up you saw in the 80s, but what is a grape nut? Folks!
They're not grapes. They're not nuts.
What is it? Do you guys know over there?
They're like a wheat byproduct.
Oh, is it a wheat berry?
Extruded wheat berry. I think it's like extruded wheat pulp.
I know.
Flavored with malt.
I know technically it's fine, but I don't like the word extruded attached to any food item.
It's going to be making a lot of appearances in this conversation.
Well, that's your thing. That's what, you know, we agree mm-hmm. to disagree.
What is a grape
nut? What is it saying?
They're made from wheat and barley, also sometimes called grain nuts. There's subtle sweetness and crumbly texture.
I'm sorry. When are they called grain nuts? Who has ever called them grain nuts?
I don't know.
Honey, can I have some grape nuts? You mean grain nuts? No. Grape nuts. Well, they're also grain nuts.
See,
well,
here, this goes right to it. Listen to this.
Yeah.
Grape nuts. Are you getting this?
Yeah, we're getting this.
Okay, good. Grape nuts is a brand of breakfast cereal made from flour, salt, and dried yeast. Developed in 1897 by C.W. Post, a former patient and later competitor of the 19th century breakfast food innovator, Dr.
Wow.
John Harvey Kellogg.
How about that?
The grape nuts.
Well, there's a movie. Let's get
my ancient foe.
Ben Affleck and Damon on this one. They did the air thing. Let's do, so they're rivals. So they're, at first he's a patient.
At first he's, my maybe ancestor saved this dude's life.
Holy.
And then he tries to shank him with some grape nuts?
Wow.
I think everyone would agree,
well,
though.
Well, I would say, in the end, whether it's karma or what happened, the Kellogg name reigns supreme in the breakfast cereal world.
I agree with you. And everyone hates grape nuts.
That's not true. You actually said you like them.
I like them, but
well,
most
then that's
people
not everybody, is
don't
it?
Care for them because...
Listen, I'm trying to teach my daughter good grammar and good... So it's not everybody, is it?
Well, grammar. I'm trying to teach well grammar. That's the grammar that you get from under the bar. Interesting. Is this happening? Are we doing it now? Or
We started.
Oh, we started.
As soon as I said, and I'll say this every time, as soon as the guest walks through the door, I don't care whether you can't see us or anything, or even, you know, if we have to go pump up the audio and post and it sounds weird, that's when it starts. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So welcome to the
I guess I give retroactive consent for your recording and publishing my words.
Well, I think it's implied legally. I don't think you'd have much to stand that you one brought thing I yourself will say, here though, knowing no, it's a podcast.
Look, I think it's great.
I'm not doing it for my wife.
I honestly was a little concerned.
About why?
Because you mentioned that this was the first episode you were recording.
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm not saying that our Kellogg versus Post Grape Nut material is, you know, going to win a Webby or anything,
mm-hmm.
this was a situation where I was like, why are we not recording this?
Right.
Let's save this for the air because See? Podcasts are so thin to begin with.
Yes, they are.
You can't afford to waste a good middle name story.
Yeah. That's exactly why.
I think it's great.
I'm a professional. I've been doing this.
I think, yeah,
it's I like, admire let's, it. We're going to get some gold.
Right.
Just in the, you know, finding out what, or
bronze.
Pewter.
Yeah.
Pewter. We're going to get some pewter just in the coming in part.
I like a grape nut, though.
Yeah.
Well, even though that guy tried to destroy my family.
Which leads me to my first question.
But not Jonathan. Sorry. Your first question was, what do I call you?
Right.
Not Jonathan.
Not Jonathan? Is that like a stage name? Like, it's, yeah. not, hey, it's Jonathan. Not
Jonathan.
And
you know him as not Jonathan.
And do you have a story behind not Jonathan?
No, my name is John. J-O-H-N, period. That's it. John is a name, and Jonathan is a name. And right. mine is not Jonathan.
That doesn't sound that funny. Is that, have you opened with, is that your opener or?
It's something I'm working on.
Okay. When do you think you'll have it finished?
Well, it's been 52 years. So maybe never.
Now, here's a question. Good. That's not my first official question,
no,
but.
It's, stay unofficial.
How, when, do you remember how we met?
No.
Oh, wow.
No.
Shit, really?
I remember being at an event, being at a show, and then going to a party afterward.
Super Bowl halftime?
Yep. Something like that.
Yep.
I think it was one of the Bill Wasik, Eugene Merman early stand-up shows that they would do above Arlene's Grocery or something.
Wow. Okay.
And I said to someone, is that David Cross? I think at the after party or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that person said, no, but it looks like him. And that's, for some reason, that's locked in as my meeting you.
So
but
it sounds
I don't
like
remember it. How we first met. I mean, I remember the first time, I remember interacting with you. You were off stage at Bumbershoot.
Okay. 2008?
It could have been then or maybe even a little earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was back when Lisa Langgang was taking pity on me and putting me in shows at Bumbershoot.
So, yeah, we started doing that in 90.
So this was after my experience with The Daily Show started, which was 2006.
Oh, okay. Because
prior to that, I was not.
Okay. Yeah.
Not someone you would ever book on a comedy show.
Right.
That's when people got the impression that I should.
And what brought you to New York and.
I had moved to New York in 1994 on the instruction of a person whom I'm now married to.
Okay.
My plan had been to return to my ancestral home of Brookline, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Which I had always thought would be a nice place to live because I had experience living there.
Sure. Moneyed white, upper class moneyed white people.
I thought I would go back and work at the Coolidge Corner movie house where I had worked in high school and then during summers in college. And then I was playing with the idea. I went to Yale University, which is an accredited 4-year college in Southern Connecticut in a town called New Haven.
Yeah, I know New Haven. I actually lived there briefly when I was young. Everywhere briefly, but I was there and then continue to stop in and go to either Frank Pepe's or Sally's.
And did you have a preference? Because they taste the same to me.
Yeah. I mean, I got to say Frank Pepe's.
Yeah.
First of all, I Sally's doesn't have, to the best of my knowledge, the summer pie, the one that's tomato, like chunks of fresh tomato and garlic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they only have it for a couple months, but man, it's amazing.
I've never had that.
It's really, really good.
Yeah.
And of course, the clam.
The clam pizza is
the
thing.
So.
Clams, white clam pizza.
Yep.
And I was living in New Haven, which was very affordable. Mm-hmm. I had finished college and I was thinking maybe this will be it for me. Because I don't want to go home and work at the movie. You know, I don't want to go home and work at the movie theater because that's the past. I'll stay here in New Haven and continue to work at the video rental store because that's the future.
Yeah.
And I was,
I'm surprised you're not in streaming.
I was living
the way this is heading.
Tremendous ease. But the woman to whom I am now married had moved to New York and she said, you are going to do this too.
Okay. Now, is just for the sake of continuing.
I went back a little bit further than you. And
no, not just in this conversation, but life. You can shorten that to say wife. There's a shorter word than the whole thing.
Well, we were not married then.
I see.
We are married now.
Right.
24 spectacular years as of September 25th.
But you've been married for 30. Interesting.
I know.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, it takes a little while to work into spectacular.
It does. You know what I mean? Well, sometimes you start at spectacular, then it dips.
Yeah, you get down into like...
And then you have an open marriage, and then things get even worse before they get better.
As it happens, all of those things had happened before we were married.
Oh, okay.
Because we met in high school.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. And started dating, I guess you would say, the summer after she graduated high school. And then we went to different colleges.
Oh, boy.
So we were on again, off again.
So how many people have you ever had sex with?
One.
Right. Okay. Any curiosity?
Yes.
I like how you sort of thought about it, but not really. You were thinking more about how do you say what you were going to say, but the answer was immediate in your head.
Well,
it was almost incredulous. Like, yes, of course.
Yes, of course.
But yeah.
Marriage is about simply maintaining curiosity.
Is it?
So the point I was making, got me a little, I believe I'm getting a little flushed.
The vapors. Oh, dear.
So we were on again, off again during college, but by the time she had finished college and moved to New York, by the time I had finished, we were on again.
Right.
And so she was like,
do you know how many
people? There's only one person you're ever going to have sex with in your life. So if you want it again, you should move to New York.
Right. Boy, that's kind of
shitty. Those are not the terms she used.
Do you know how many people she's had sex with?
I think so.
Yeah.
But that was not a question that I ever asked or would care to.
Oh, you should. You should go home and find out, then call us back here.
I read Reddit a lot. Mm-hmm. And I am aware of how common a conversation about body count is between young couples these days.
Oh,
and boy, it
not
always
good.
Ends up being a really fun conversation.
Not good.
No.
You know what I found out?
And I don't like to use the term wife.
Why? It's biblical?
Because I feel
it constrains you?
Her. Like, I mean, yeah, she's my wife and I'm her husband. But, you know, she's a whole human being, not defined by her relationship to me. So,
yeah, I didn't pass any judgment when I just.
But you could say wife. And as it happens on my own podcast, the Judge John Hodgman podcast, available through Maximum Fun Network every Wednesday.
That's interesting. I haven't been asked to be on that.
Well, we don't really have guests. We just interview non-performers who have disputes with each other.
Oh,
and
right.
Resolve
yes.
those disputes.
Yes, I should.
So it's
know
not
that.
Like we have. You
right.
know,
true.
You're welcome to. I'd be thrilled.
No, it's all right.
It's called the Judge John Hodgman podcast, available every Wednesday from MaximumFun.org on Wednesdays. And I got into the habit of saying awkwardly when referring to her, my wife, who is a whole human being in her own right, which is quite a mouthful. But when I stand by. But then I moved to New York and I stayed and I worked at a literary agency.
Really? Doing what? In what capacity?
First, I was the receptionist. Then I was an assistant to an agent named Susan Ginsberg. And then I thought that would be my career. And I started representing clients.
Oh, wow. I had no idea.
Yeah. It was, I represented, it was like friends in New York who were writers. So like my friend Darren Strauss is a novelist and I sold his first book, which was about Chang and Eng Bunker, the conjoined twins who, the term Siamese twin was coined for.
Right. How has that guy not been canceled?
Darren?
Yeah.
Or Chang and Ang?
Chang and Ang with the kind of racist. Do I say guys or guy? Is it plural or?
There were two people.
Yeah. Okay.
There were two people, and they married sisters.
Yeah, I remember from the Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Believe It or Not. Yeah.
Can I? Here's a side note. I have always had a problem taking things literally, and I have multiple examples where I don't understand something because it's not meant to be literal. But when I was a kid, and that was in the Sunday Funnies, you know, the Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Right.
I thought for years until I was an adult, I thought it meant that you could choose to believe it or not. that it might be made up.
Uh-huh.
And
maybe you were supposed to guess.
Yeah.
That's
for
funny.
Real. Because I took it literally. And I have
Did
so
you
many
whisper
of
to yourself as you were looking through it, like, believe, believe, not,
not believe,
believe, not believe,
not believe,
right?
Stamp, not believe, send it back,
send it in to Ripley's. Maybe I'll win a box of grape nuts.
And I didn't understand the joke. I didn't understand why it was funny.
That's true.
This is a different thing.
I thought you were going to talk about the scourge of non-funny things in the funny pages.
Oh, God.
Like your Prince Valiant.
Yeah.
Like
Chaff. Or who was the ranger? The cowboy? Mark?
Mark Trail. Yeah.
Yeah.
All the adventure ones.
Just boring.
Apartment 3B.
Yeah.
Actually, that one was kind of sexy. That was how young John Hodgman got curious, if you know what I mean. Three women living together in apartment 3B. Very sexy.
Oh, wow.
They were always dating and getting into scrapes.
Ugh. It's like Three's Company.
It was like Three's Company.
But different.
But the other one you were talking about, not Ripley's Believe It or Not, there was something else.
No, I was going to say as another example of taking things literally and not understanding, not seeing past it. I have numerous examples, and they're worse as I get older because then they're more kind of heady things. But when I was a kid, for a long, 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 long time, I did not get the joke. What's worse than finding a worm in your apple? Finding half a worm. Because I would just go, I would think, well, no, I'd rather have half a worm than a whole worm.
That's less worm.
Yeah, it's less worm. Without understanding. Oh, no, the idea is that you ate it.
Yeah.
That you, I just couldn't see past. I still have an issue, but yeah.
Yeah, you would think less worm is better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what I'm telling you, though, is literally true.
I believe it.
I did work at a literary agency.
I think literally. I think that's
in all senses of the word.
It's
actually happened, and it was related to literary stuff.
Sure,
I represented Bruce Campbell, the actor.
Oh yeah,
on his first book.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was going to be what I was doing
because
I liked writing and creating, but that's work,
right?
So why not get someone else to do that work, and then give them some ideas, and then take 15% of what they make.
Smart. Oh, I mean, taking 15% of what the people who are doing the work, that's just a brilliant thing to me.
It's really amazing how many people get in on that scam. But what I realized in order to do it, you do have to be shameless.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have to be comfortable with confrontation because that's what negotiation is. And
right.
I could not handle negotiation.
Can you go back to shameless? How did you give me an example of how you...
Well, I'm overstating it, but like for me to go to a publisher and say, you know, my client needs $100,000 advance for this book.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, even now I'm thinking like, it's too much. Or them to come and say, we want to give you $10,000. And for me to go back and go, no, $20,000 or I hang up.
Right.
Like to me, that's not shamelessness, but it's.
Well, that's the confrontation you were talking about.
Confidence, I guess.
False confidence because you didn't.
I was and am still an only child, not versed in confrontation of any kind. And it made me very, very nervous. And I also felt like, yeah, there is a little bit of a shell game element. Like I will take 15% of your income forever. Mm-hmm. Just because I made a few phone calls on your behalf?
Sure.
On the other hand, there are lots of agents and managers who really devote themselves to the creative process.
So absolutely, yeah.
I would have been very happy doing that. I just didn't like making the phone calls.
I get it. That's not my thing either. But I want to go back to, you said you're an only child. So
yes.
Do you have any idea if there were going to be other kids, what their middle names would have been?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. I don't think my parents ever had plans to have another child.
But, you know, a happy accident.
So it's not like it came up.
Right.
Right. If they had sex a second time, mm-hmm. it kind of boggles the mind. Wow.
You don't have to have sex to have a kid.
What's that?
You don't have to have sex to have a kid.
Oh, phew.
Yeah.
What a relief.
Yeah, let your mom and dad know ASAP.
Yeah, if they had adopted another child, well, I would hope they would consult me, first of all.
Well, he could have come into a tube and, you know, I guess that's sex, sort of. But you know what I mean? Like, then they
yeah, there are possibilities there.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the other family names, Kellogg is a family name from my grandfather's side. And he went back, Hodgman went lots of Yankee, you know, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants in Massachusetts, New England, and
sure,
Lewiston, Maine, and stuff. Chivolo was my grandmother's name from Italy, Northern Italy.
Hmm.
Callahan was my mom's maiden name, but she was her grandfather was German. It's kind of like white European mutt.
So maybe
Benoni was the name of a preacher.
That's a good preacher name.
In my grandfather's family.
So maybe Anheuser-Busch would have been a good middle name
sure.
for another kid.
Yeah,
another
maybe.
Another Hodgman.
Maybe, I want to say Toucan Sam.
Well, that's a mascot.
To keep it in the Kellogg's family? I think that's a Kellogg's one. Toucan Sam or?
Oh, I mean, they got a monopoly.
Snap, Crackle, and Pop?
I mean, come on. Kellogg's.
Snap, Crackle, Pop, Hodgman?
There you go. Well, I mean, isn't there an antitrust thing on can't, I mean, they monopolized breakfast
I can't
cereals.
Think of a good honey. I can't think of a good mascot that isn't. That's the thing Post never had was mascots.
Oh, no. Sorry. They had, I believe they had Sugar Bear or Sugar, right?
Yeah. Sugar Bear. That's
Sugar
right.
Bear.
He was cool.
Yeah.
He was cool.
And that was also the name of the pimp on Starsky and Hutch, or almost. They had to go back.
Did they have to change it?
Yeah. They had to change it.
Oh.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I don't know, but yeah. And if I were a girl, I might have been named Jane after my mom's sister.
Well, that's boring.
Now, all right, good.
John, I'm forgetting.
But I am an only child, unless the payoff of your first question is, do you remember when we met? Is we met in bassinets in the hospital because we're twins separated at birth.
Well, John, I have some exciting news for you.
Delve into the shadows of the mind. With Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hi, little David Cross here. Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals make eating better every day easy. Wherever tomorrow takes you, where could it be? Be ready with pre-prepared, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved meals delivered right to your door. You'll have over 35 different options a week to choose from. What are those options? Well, how about keto, calorie smart, vegan, and veggie, and more? And there's even more to enjoy with the over 55 nutrition-packed add-ons. When I saw that, I was like, you have to be over 55 years old. That's not it. Over 55 nutrition-packed add-ons that help make your weekly meal planning even more delicious. What are you waiting for? Seriously. Godot? Get started today and have a feel-good week of meals ready to go. Godot. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, upscale options done easily. Flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing 6 to 18 meals per week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. No prep, no mess meals. Factor meals are 100% ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. Head to factormeals.com/senses50 and use code senses50 to get 50% off. That's code senses50 at factormeals.com/senses50 to get 50% off. Now I'm going to do the math for you. That's half. No, so the premise of this podcast. It's a thin premise, but it's
a podcast.
Yeah, it's just a jumping off point to have a conversation, which we, because we're old friends,
right?
Jumped right into, and this almost isn't even necessary, but I feel obligated because of the title, Senses Working Overtime.
I see it there.
Yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
It's a cool art.
Yeah, art.
So I'm just going to ask you a couple questions. Again, I think this is unnecessary at this point, but I mean, I feel this is the first show. Not that this will air first. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
No, probably I'm going to guess these guys are going to want the Obama one to go first. Is that right?
That would be a big launch.
Yeah.
That would be a big launch.
It'd be weird to do Obama on the 4th. So, yeah. So I'm assuming Obama first.
I have followed Obama before.
Have you?
Yes.
Were they aware that you were following them?
they left a door open.
Mm.
Yeah.
But what happened?
At the 2009 Radio and Television Correspondents Awards dinner, back when people thought I should do comedy.
And
they invited me to do comedy.
When he left the stage, did he go, follow that motherfucker?
Basically. In the past, the comedian would go on and then the president would go on.
Sure. That's how it should be, I would think.
But I think that
here's the president gives this.
But I had to follow the president of the United States. He decided he wanted to go first. And it had nothing to do with me. I think that here's the White House Correspondents Awards dinner had happened. And I don't remember the situation, but it was just like they made a decision like we don't want to have the president be responsible for anything the comedian
said.
We're
mopping up your mess.
Yeah, exactly. Let's just have the president come and do the thing.
So the president gives this important, interesting, weighted
and
speech.
Funny. He was funny.
Well, he's got good writers, right?
He's got good writers.
And then
he's funny.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to stage, John Hodgman.
You know him as the PC, and I don't have his name, but anyway, here he is. But yes, so anyway, you were talking about the premise.
Yes, which is the five senses.
Yes.
See, hear, touch, taste, smell.
Yep, I agree with you. that tracks.
Well, you know, there have been some issues with the UN. And
I mean, speaking of the senses and our perception of reality, some of us live in a non-shared reality at this point.
That is true. Yeah. So I'm going to ask you, what is, and I hope you're prepared for this. It doesn't matter if you are or not. What is the best thing you've ever touched?
Oh, best sense of touch. Oh, I'm going to work through some options and you can tell me what you think.
Keep it clean.
Okay, hang on a second. Let me go back to the drawing board. The two things that came to mind immediately in terms of touch are, you know, like our children are now adults. Mm-hmm. We have two children and they are now out of the house and out in the world. So basically, I'm just walking around the streets of Park Slope, seeing all these kids and crying. So I really do miss kissing them on the head.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good one. That also involves smell.
Sure. Yeah.
Not taste, though. I'm not licking them.
Well, it's bound to leave a bit of a residue, but yeah.
Well, then the other touch, sense of touch that came to mind is swimming in really cold water.
Mm. Yeah.
We spend,
I was going to say your Maine.
Yeah. We spend a bunch of the year in Maine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, going on vacation in Maine is not exactly going on vacation in Maine. It's a series of existential trials.
Yeah.
As Maine tries to eject you from it or life. And one of the things you do in Maine is go swimming, which is walk into the water screaming.
Yeah.
Because it's very, very cold. And I've now perfected three. Mm-hmm. One is you jump in off of something.
Right.
And just take the hit.
Yep.
The other is you walk in just up to your genitals.
Yeah.
And then spend about 4 days debating, are you going to go further?
Right. Because your genitals have
that's where it really
crawled right back up in you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the only reason you get to go in deeper is that the water is trying to find your genitals, but that's when it really gets real. You're feeling
that.
And
what's the third way?
The third way is kind of like jumping in, but it is walking at an even pace into the water like you are the creature from the Black Lagoon who has been heartbroken and is turning your back on the world of the surface, and you just walk in to the ocean to
it's
die
the classic
or whatever.
Kind of fill your pockets with stones and
yes,
walk in and
exactly.
Say goodbye.
Exactly. You say goodbye to life behind you. And
that is
what it feels like, is that you are saying goodbye to life behind you because you are suddenly and immersed in extreme discomfort and pain.
I have only had one experience in the Maine waters.
Yeah.
I went to York Beach.
Southern Maine. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. If you want to get cocky about it, sure. It was
no gatekeeping is what I wanted to say.
So that's pussy. That's pussy water.
It's definitely warmer.
It's warm. How much warmer is it?
You'll find out.
I have nothing but admiration for the folks who can go in that cold water. I've done it a couple times, but it's not my thing. And I love swimming. I was a water baby, and I was swimming very early, and I'm a good swimmer. But
you grew up in the South, where swimming is nice.
Yeah, yeah, true. But I also, I grew up all over the place too. I had certainly.
You've been to a lot of beaches. You've been to a lot of lakes.
John, I've been to a lot of beaches, man.
Yeah, you swim a lot of waters.
Swim a lot of waters.
When you go in and, your body is rejecting what's happening so hard, you don't die, and then you adapt to it.
I don't.
There's a huge endorphin rush that happens.
I do know, I know the sensation because I used to go, when I lived in the East Village, I would go to the 10th Street Baths all the time. Right.
Yeah.
They have that, you get a plaza. And you get, you're in the steam room, and it is hot. That's the hottest. I've been to a ton of them, and that's the hottest one.
Good for you.
Yeah. I think it is.
To be sitting next to a furnace having a man hit you with oak leaves.
Well, they're, first
Who
of all,
came
they're,
up with like, this? Yeah, that's medicine.
It, this is for real.
All right.
I would do this and half of it, you're laying down face down, on that little, weird pad thing. They keep pouring the water. And, before I think I can count on one hand the amount of times I've asked for the water, because usually they do it every few minutes. And I would always think that or imagine in a sense that I was in a POW camp in Vietnam and I can do this. Uh-huh. I can get through this.
Right.
Knowing that full well, it's not a POW. In fact, I'm paying for the privilege of having this torture. But then, you go jump into the cold pool,
The cold pool.
Which is extremely cold.
Right.
And they always had the different guys over the years, but I don't know if you experienced this guy. He was there for a while. He's very short, stocky, ultimate kind of Russian Jew. Mm-hmm. Big, broad, short. Mm-hmm. He was short, but big. I mean, a massive guy.
Yeah.
And I, you know, he's like, okay, now you go to pool, you know, and I've done it a bunch of times. So I did it. And I kind of jumped in, and you know, you have that immediate like, oh my God, Jesus, you know, and then I go out far enough so that I can't just walk back up. Yeah. I have to be in there for a few seconds.
Yeah.
And he comes over and he puts this massive claw on my shoulder. He's huge, uh-huh. right? And he's like not squeezing hard,
right.
but holding me there. And he goes, you tip me, yes? And I'm like, yeah, of course. Yeah, I gotta go. You know, and then run back in.
I thought you were gonna say he puts his hand on your head and pushes you under.
Oh God, no.
But there was the implied threat.
I do go under. I mean, yeah. I go and I do the thing.
It's an exhilarating feeling, and it does.
It is.
It creates, like, there's chemical stuff that happens. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have our friend Molly goes swimming every day all winter long. Swimming, but she goes in
and comes out again,
and it's therapeutic.
I admire it. I just don't.
But for me, I would never do that.
Yeah.
But for me in the summer, it's not only the physical head rush, but there's also just this reminder that like, oh yeah, you can be extremely comfortable, but you will adapt.
And I'm
someone who does not like transitions in life, such mm-hmm. as getting up and walking across the room or whatever. Like I like inertia. Mm-hmm. And going into the water and remembering you can go through a period of discomfort and then it's wonderful. Like it's going to be great. Even though there's a period of discomfort is sort of metaphorically helpful for me.
Yeah. It's
a fucking hot answer to your question, honestly.
Is mental,
it's like better than kissing my children. It's kind of on the nose.
Yeah.
Sort of almost literally on the nose.
You'd kiss them on the nose?
No, but
you'd
kiss the ocean on the nose. You shove your nose, like when you're kissing your children on their head, your nose gets a little smushed. One time my children, when they were little, they had a lemonade stand mm-hmm. outside our apartment in Park Slope. I'm really doxing myself. And
are you still at the same place?
Street apartment between 7th and 8th Avenues. Oh. Come on down.
Oh, that's I used to buy heroin there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, that's how we first met. So my children were doing this lemonade stand outside our apartment.
You would be the most awesome heroin dealer.
Yeah,
nobody would ever suspect it.
Oh, you know, maybe this is my new career because I need one.
The older I get, the more I find myself wanting to be more intentional about the way I live, eat, and take care of my body. The old adage, you are what you eat, rings very true to all of us in the modern day. And I'm always looking for an on-the-go protein snack that satisfies me. But now I've found one that helps me live intentionally too. Mosh Bars. Mosh is a company founded by Mariah Shriver and her son, Patrick Schwarzenegger, with a simple mission to create a conversation about brain health through food, education, and research. Oh, did you know that Maria's father suffered? He did, from Alzheimer's. And since then, she and Patrick Schwarzenegger have dedicated themselves to finding ways to help other families dealing with this debilitating disease. Mosh joined forces with the world's top scientists and functional nutritionists to go beyond your average protein bar. With 6 delicious flavors, each Mosh bar has 12 grams of protein, and it's made with ingredients that support brain health like ashwagandha, lion's mane, collagen, and omega-3s. They also have a line of plant-based protein bars in 3 delicious flavors, but here's the best part to make you feel good. Mosh donates a portion of all proceeds from your order to fund gender-based brain health research through the Women's Alzheimer's Movement. Why gender-based? Well, 2/3 of all Alzheimer's patients are women. So take that, men. If you want to find ways to give back, quote unquote, to others and fuel your body and your brain, Moss Bars are the perfect choice for you. Head to mosslife.com/senses to save 20% off plus free shipping on your first 6-count trial pack. That's 20% off plus free shipping on your first 6-count trial pack and MOSHLIFE.com/senses. Thank you, Mosh, for sponsoring this episode.
And they were doing this, so they had this lemonade stand, and I was keeping an eye because they were little, relatively little.
Mm-hmm.
So I was out there just making sure that,
sure,
you know, everything was going fine. They weren't overcharging.
Right.
They weren't fucking up people's change or whatever. But I
think it's interesting that you were, your concern was for the consumer, not for the, for them, for the kids. It was more about,
I wanted
to
make
sure, rip these people
off.
Well,
I was getting 15% of what they made. Okay. This, so I had to make sure that they, nice, were charging the right amount.
You got to teach them early how this yeah, business works.
I needed to get my yeah, VIG out of this. Yeah. But I was looking out for creeps, right? And
yeah,
and then this guy kind of was a little creepy. This is a big, tall guy.
South Slope, man.
He had no children with him, or he was just by himself. Just kind of standing off to the side and looking at the lemonade stand action and my kids kind of...
Oh, I don't like that.
Chuckling and smiling to himself. And I noticed that he was holding a lit cigarette behind his back, like... Which somehow,
is,
like...
This is scary.
Hiding that he was smoking, like...
Yeah.
Just go ahead and smoke, dude. You're on the like, yeah, there's just an even weirder thing. And I'm like, am I going to have to, I don't like confrontation. Am I going to have to talk to this
am
guy?
Am I going to have to save my children?
I mean, I guess I would,
gotta
in order to
out,
save my children, I suppose I would. And plus, you know, there's my 15% in this too. And then I realized, oh, that's the actor Vincent D'Onofrio.
So, oh, like, so you had every reason to be scared.
I was just like, oh no, he's just being Vincent D'Onofrio.
Right.
Like, okay, I get it.
He's on the spectrum.
He's just yeah, D'Onofrian.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
He's pulling a D'Onofrio.
He's just doing a D'Onofrio.
Is what we call it in the business.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. He's just a weirdo, right?
Yeah.
Is he a monster? I don't know.
No. Not at all. I think
he has a reputation for just being kind of an oddball.
He's odd in the, you know, conventional sense of but I've worked with him before. I actually,
yeah,
ran into him in Tompkins Square Park one time, where it was one of those odd things.
That's where
you
were looking at children.
Yeah, we were looking at cigarettes, and and he started a conversation with me. I was in a coffee shop across from the park. It was back when I lived in the East Village, and it was one of those things where he just started a conversation, and I just remember it was a hot, humid day, like sticky, one of those summer days.
Yeah.
And I'd gone in to get a nice coffee, and he starts,
you D'Onofrio.
Know, just pulling a D'Onofrio.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, wait, he must have a very sharp memory, because we worked together, but I didn't even put that together until he started. And when I say, like, it wasn't like an introduction kind of thing. It wasn't like, hey, we work together, or hey, David, or whatever.
Right.
He just started into a conversation. And the whole time you're going, oh, that's Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah. 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 No, I was very excited to see him. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Obviously, I rushed him to the head of the line.
Oh,
don't
did
charge
you?
Mr. D'Onofrio, kids.
And how did he react?
What's that?
Yeah, did he tip well?
No. I wouldn't take his money.
Oh.
No. I mean, that was good. It got us on page 6.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
And was the lemonade stand a success?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It went on for years.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's
my
great.
My children missed several years of school.
Oh, that's great.
We were
great,
just making too much money. Once we got the D'Onofrio bump, that was their job.
Yeah, but here's the thing about America. It's like, if you're making money, you don't need an education.
No, absolutely. That's what I said to them.
You don't need social skills. It's all about the money.
As long as you're selling that lemonade.
Yeah.
And I'm getting my cut.
And that's not even a euphemism.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
I take it literally. David Cross style.
Yeah.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I don't not believe it. I do believe it.
I also, I want to thank you for co-starring with me, supporting my work in Pitch Perfect 2.
That's right.
Which we did in Baton Rouge.
It was in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
A terrible place.
I would agree with you.
Yeah. It's not as bad as Shreveport.
I've never been to Shreveport.
It's awful.
And I apologize to those who were born in Baton Rouge and live in Baton Rouge and have to convince yourself that Baton Rouge is an okay place to be because you're stuck there.
Yeah. I mean, the good things about Baton Rouge are Raising Cane's, the chicken place.
Did it start there? Because there are... Like, if you're saying it's good, Baton Rouge is good for Raising Cane's, the chicken finger place.
Yeah, the chicken finger place.
Because it started in Baton Rouge,
so we have
Baton Rouge to thank.
There are other
Raising Cane's, so Baton Rouge doesn't really win on that.
Huh.
It's a chain.
Okay. Would you guys look that up?
Yeah, look that up.
See how many Raising Cane's there are?
I think there's a Raising Cane's opening in New York City.
What? Where?
I believe that's true.
Times Square? I hope.
Well, it is the Baton Rouge of Manhattan.
Yes, it is.
It's not even true, though, because, I mean, the thing about Baton Rouge is I guess Times Square would be the New Orleans of Manhattan? Because Baton Rouge is sort of like, never mind. No, I don't want to get letters from Baton Rouge.
It's a college town with...
It's just hot.
And it's hot, and the weather's not good, and there's... A lot of sadness there, a sad life.
I don't know how much time you spent there. I feel like I was there for maybe 4 or 5 days.
Well, that's how we shot for 4 days, and then I shot another scene that was a day. I went there for a year prior to get into character and do all that and do some studying
for the
character.
Right.
And try to bring... Just a humanity to the character.
Yeah. What was his name again? Scott?
Guys, you want to look that up?
There are 15 locations in Baton Rouge.
15. Where did Raising Cane's originate?
I really hope the podcast is sponsored by Raising Cane's.
It should be, right?
Raising Cane's, get on it.
If not, I'm going to... create a product called Raisin Cane's, and it's going to be deep fried raisins with a
chicken. In the shape of canes, walking sticks?
Yes. But it's going to be chicken flavored, deep fried raisins in the shape of a cane.
Raisin fried chicken?
That was one of the best times I've ever had working on a movie.
Really?
Absolutely. That was so much fun. And Elizabeth Banks, the director, was, totally cool. Just improvise whatever you want to do. And I was amazed at how Jason Jones kept pushing the Green Bay Packers with real specifics of terrible games that they played or playoff losses, and like right in their face, it just kept escalating. I was like, holy shit, he's gonna get the shit kicked out of him.
Jason. So
each take, he would have something harsher and more, you know.
For those of you who, and I really pity you, who've not seen Pitch Perfect 2, David is the star of the film.
Yeah, kind of, sure.
Hodgman rounds out the cast. But there's a sequence where the Bellas, the mm-hmm. different a cappella groups,
right,
have a riff off where they have like a fight, a song fight.
Yeah,
in the basement,
a competition.
They have to sing. They have to do a cappella songs on a theme, and the theme is butts.
It's ridiculous, but yeah.
Well, the point is, so you know, you had your heroes who were the Bellas, mm-hmm. and then you had the villains who were the Flula's
the Germans,
and then you had the boy heroes who were the mm-hmm. what's them callers or whatever, mm-hmm. and we were the tone hangers, me and Jason Jones,
Reggie Watts
and
Joe Latrulio,
yeah, and we were the old guys. We were like the old collegiate singing group
with the cardigans,
yeah. And then also randomly the Green Bay Packers were the
the Green Bay Packers,
which is a really funny joke. And they were actually the, you know, members of the football team, the Green Bay Packers. And the in this alternate universe, they had a secret a cappella group.
And Yeah, they were,
they were going
and
they were underground.
Great. And they were awesome.
They were so much fun.
They were really fun.
But Jones,
but Jason
never
Jones.
Underestimate Jones's ability to be an asshole.
Like, I was.
It's an art, such an art form for him. He absolutely cultivates it. I don't mind saying it into a microphone. He was being an asshole to the Lakers on purpose for fun. And it was incredible to watch.
The Packers.
Packers, excuse me. The Lakers, he would never do that to.
No, he has more respect. But he escalated it because we kept doing these takes, and there was a point where he's like in, you know, Jake Matthews or whoever's face and going, but he had all the he had all these specific things, like a game from, you know, 2006.
Yeah.
That was like the playoff loss, and it was some fuck up that somebody made, and, you know, let somebody whatever it was, and but real specific.
Yeah,
and like, you know, you only gained 1 yard after the catch, and and just
and those guys were just
or
like.
Flagrant foul or a flat, you know, penalty that cost him, and had all these specifics, and he's right in their face.
And you know that he just had it off the dome, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that was the beauty of that, because you could see a guy, you could see a lesser asshole being like, I know what a funny bit will be. I'm going to just get up in the Green Bay Packers' face and talk about all their losses, and then Googling all the losses.
And then you could see them if that he's like a guy, he represents a guy at the bar who's had too much to drink.
Right.
He's like, fuck these guys. Like, I'm going to, you know, whoever it is, whether it's an actor or a sports figure or something. And the guy wants to pick a fight. It was like that, but there's cameras and there's people. So you could tell the instinct was to fucking throttle this guy.
Yeah.
But they couldn't. Because cameras were rolling and they're supposed to be.
It wasn't
scripted. It was all improvised.
It was so incredible.
Yeah, I was amazed that he didn't get his ass kicked.
I loved that too, and I loved hanging out with you, and I loved hanging out with everybody. But it was an intense those 4 days were shooting nights for whatever reason, and it was hot.
Yeah,
and we were not shooting on a soundstage. We were shooting on
a warehouse, right?
It was a warehouse that every Halloween would become a walk-through haunted house.
Oh, that makes sense.
So there were all these, you know, outside of the set that they built, which was supposed to be your character's
basement.
Yeah. You know, you played an eccentric billionaire who had an obsession with underground a cappella, and you built a cappella stadium in the basement of your mansion or something.
I wonder what that was like in the writer's room when they were pitching that.
I don't know. I hope they just said sold in the room. It's really funny. But outside of that, you would then walk out to like take a break and get some fresh air, and you'd be sitting in like a skeleton throne that was left over. And it was really hot. So, and, you know, obviously you can't run air conditioning during shooting. I'm not even sure they had air conditioning to run. Maybe that's why we were shooting at night. But it was really, really exciting. And just everyone was hanging out together. And it was like going to this highly intense 4 day summer camp.
It was fun.
Inside the mouth of someone running 108 fever or something. It's like damp, dark, moist.
It was, it was windowless too. There's windows, no air. Pretty much a death trap for any kind of Halloween setup.
Yeah.
That's got that. What was the club in Rhode Island?
The club in Rhode Island?
Caught fire and everybody died within a minute and a half.
I don't know. I mean, I remember that story, but I don't remember the.
It's a very funny story.
Yeah, it's great. I got to look it up.
I mean, it just depends on your perspective.
How's a search of the Raising Cane's locations around the country going? Because I need that Rhode Island information as soon as possible.
Well, so the Raising Cane's, the original was on Broadway in Baton Rouge.
Ah.
There you go. Did you know that? Or were you just guessing that it was based on the conversation?
It's strange how much Raising Cane's defined my experience of Baton Rouge as well, because that's what people were talking about.
It's also good. Let's not. Did you have it?
Yeah, it's good.
It's really good.
It's really good. But is there one coming to New York? I need this information.
When we'll get here? Is it on its way now? Is it going by train or rail?
When are they bringing us the Fingies?
Oh, well, they opened their flagship store in Times Square just this past summer, June 27th.
Boom!
Wow.
How about that? Of course it's going to be in Times Square.
After we finish this podcast. That'll be in about 2 days, right? When they'll stop recording?
Okay. Yeah.
I'll be very hungry
though. Well, we talked about Pitch Perfect too.
We have talked about Pitch
Perfect. I'd like to give PP2. Pitch Perfect 2 a plug. I don't know if anybody saw it. But it's a wonderful film that's all it's as I said earlier, I take things literally too much, but it's a beautiful allegory. Mm-hmm. And there's so much metaphor. It's all metaphor. And if you have studied Jung, sure. Then you can watch it in a different way. You take different things knowing that it's all metaphor.
Synchronicity.
There you go.
Yeah. Jungian concept of synchronicity.
And
well, it's official subtitle at first.
Yes, that's right.
Pitch Perfect 2, the Jungian concept of synchronicity.
Yes. And Anna Kendrick's, is it Anna or Anna?
I say Anna.
Anna. Is it Kendrick or Keendrike? I'm not sure.
It's Ennis Klondike. Okay.
A wonderful actress from what I've heard.
Yep.
And
native of Portland, Maine.
Native of Portland, Maine. Mm-hmm. Right.
I happen
right.
to know.
She exudes Maine.
She's been in cold waters.
Yeah. And her character is like Sisyphus in a sense. Mm-hmm. She has a Sisyphean task, yeah. as it were, which gets answered in
got a boulder to roll up a hill.
Yeah. It gets answered in Pitch Perfect 3, and I know they're working on Pitch Perfect 4.
I'm sorry, did you say there was a Pitch Perfect 3?
3, yeah.
When are they filming that one?
I think it's filmed. I think it's done.
Oh, wait a minute. But
the Tone Hangers, yeah.
Yeah,
They're mentioned throughout the movie.
It seems to me...
Are you miffed?
I'm just confused because I thought of... I mean...
Well, they
it's
did.
It's got to be a misunderstanding because I feel like I would be in.
No,
Pitch
they
Perfect
did
3.
The whole the Tone Hangers are in there.
Oh,
yeah,
they are.
Yeah, they're like the main part, the main cast,
No.
Yeah,
in Pitch Perfect 3.
In Pitch Perfect 3, yes, it's the Tone Hanger story.
This is fan fiction on the web or
no,
something?
No, this is a movie that they shot, that they released, that you can see on the JetBlue flight going from Denver to Cincinnati.
But probably overseas. They did like a whole different cast. Like,
what do you mean overseas?
Like maybe in China, they filmed an homage to Pitch Perfect and they recast everybody with Chinese speaking actors or something? Because I just don't.
No. They filmed it with the original Tone Hangers. You're all AI, and then everybody else is in there.
That
Jason
makes sense.
And Reggie and Joe.
I
and
forgot about that.
Myself.
Yeah. No, I had on our last night of filming.
Uh-huh.
I asked them to scan me because I had already approved the script for Pitch Perfect 3.
Oh, okay. So there you go.
But I was like, I would prefer to be AI in it.
Right.
And then we signed a thing. That's right.
Yeah.
Because I feel so stupid. I forgot about it. I just got that check for $3 million. My royalty check for Pitch Perfect 3.
Really?
Yeah.
$3 million, which means, let's see. I'm going to 14 is times 17 minus 3. But then taxes, federal. Yeah. Hang on. A bit. 17 versus.
I could tell you the number.
Oh, what is it?
$279 million.
Is how much you made from the $300
million?
That was
my payout. And then okay. I get the residuals.
How did you make so much money? I don't. That seems like
I open pictures in Malaysia.
I don't. Okay. That's a city in Singapore. That gives you, that is worth $297 million or $79 million,
or
whatever you said?
I have many, many hit movies that make a lot of money in Malaysia.
So the company was willing to spend $300 million.
Well, it's pure profit for them.
Okay.
By a sequel called Pure Profit 2.
Wow.
The Jungian concept of synchronicity.
Wow. This is great. I've learned a lot about this. I had a blast
throughout
shooting
all of the South Pacific, Indonesia, Malaysia, Fiji, everything. Every motion picture always has a John Hodgman pick running.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So you're big. So why Two questions. One is, why
love
do you think...
Love of the craft. That's why I keep doing it.
Oh, okay. Well, I wasn't that... Okay. But why do you think you're so popular in that region of the world?
I have no idea.
Really? You haven't...
I've never even been.
Get out of here. Not to even to be feted?
Never even been to be feted. To be feted.
Feted?
Gets very humid out there. You can get feted pretty quick.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's...
I don't know why I said it was humid. I don't even know, because I've never been there.
No, I think it is. I think it is. It's a tropical.
It's probably more tropical.
On the closer to the equator. Have you ever been?
No, they did make a Pitch Perfect 3, and I was not called back. Were you in that one? PP3?
John, we all were in PP3, except for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
And they, I thought it was a little egregious how they wrote your character off. I thought it was cruel, actually.
What is it they did?
You were experimenting with a black hole, and then you went through the black hole, and you were literally extruded because of the black hole.
I'd rather you not use that word.
You don't like it?
You know, it grosses me out.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, you were
pooped,
squeezed.
Squeezed?
Yeah.
Poop squeezed out of a black hole?
Not out into, I mean, through the black hole. And then, It was worse than that, because then they had your character come back. You were saved somehow, but it was just your nose, and then your nose went as part of some experiment, went up in Elon Musk's SpaceX rocket, which took off, but then exploded. You know, 5 minutes into the flight,
and it's really quite a plot line.
Yeah,
for my character who's famously named Tonehanger 3,
yeah. They changed it to Trey, so it's more So your Tonehanger, your Trey.
Tony Hanger Trey.
Tonehanger Trey. So you're Trey. You know.
And I'm just a nose in the movie?
Initially, you were a nose. But then you got sat on by the guy who played Mr. Belvedere in the sitcom, who, this is a very famous story, at a read-through, I was wearing very loose pants, and this is true, accidentally sat on his balls, the testicles, and then they couldn't, the production had to shut down for like a week and a half.
Wait, which part of the story is true?
The thing about sitting on his testicles is true. The thing that's also true is he playing himself.
Mr. Belvedere.
The actor playing Mr. Belvedere, playing himself.
Whose name
sat
was?
On,
his own balls.
No, sat on the nose. That was
sat
your
on the nose.
Yeah.
Oh, that was my character.
Yeah. And then you got, and then he accidentally was like, no, and he clenched and you went into his lower GI.
I was reverse extruded.
You were reverse extruded. Uh-huh. And then you, I can't remember, but you end up in the Gowanus Canal.
Probably you pooped it.
It could be. They don't, it's not clear. But I just thought that was a strange...
And elaborate.
Elaborate and just, but also a little cruel. Like, why not just... Like, oh, his mom's sick and he has to visit her or say anything.
Or not mention me at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate the tribute. Thanks, Elizabeth Banks.
It's like they went out of their way.
Like going out of your way to write me out of PP3. And the Adam Devine PP de facto PP4 show.
Yeah. It was a fun experience. And and you know, they put me up at a crazy master suite, king suite thing. Like it's like a living, like it's bigger than my apartment in Brooklyn, you know. I mean, it was massive, penthouse, 12,000 square feet.
You stayed at a Holiday Inn?
Yeah. I think that was so they could save money, so they could, because if you've seen my contract,
well, I could imagine.
Yeah.
Money well spent.
Yeah.
We were across the parking lot from a Ruth's Chris Steakhouse.
So in Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
Can I, I'll tell you this little true story. When I was early on, when I was doing stand up, this is quite early. And I think I would have been about 19 or 20 maybe. And I just started going out on the road, and I was opening in Baton Rouge, and the club wasn't doing that well, and it was papered, you know, and just free drinks, and it was just awful. It was a terrible situation, and I was, you know, a little kind of button pushy back then, and I do not remember the bit that where this happened, but there were a bunch of guys from LSU who were there sitting at the tables just drinking, you know, their $2 drink tickets and whatever.
Drinking the beer, just drinking the tickets. That's how hardcore they were.
Yeah, they were. And one of the guys, big guy, like I made the mistake of acknowledging him or engaging him. And I was, you know, just like, oh, you guys don't like me, do you? And whatever. And then they clearly didn't like me. And they were like mean. And and then one of the guys, big guy, just stood up and did this thing right to me. He's like, he's as far away as like over there. And he just stands up and he goes,
ha! Ha!
Looking right at me.
Wowie zowie.
And like
I thought that got
show.
Retired with Looney Tunes.
Well, this was a while ago. I was I was 20, 19 or 20, I think. But yeah, and that was my first introduction to Baton Rouge.
The fist into palm.
Yeah, literally. And he stood up. You know, everybody seated.
Sure.
Made a point to stand up. Yeah, it was pretty, it was corny.
It's really corny. Like, did you point it out, Jen? It's a little on the nose.
If I had the wits and confidence back then.
Can I punch this up a little bit, so to speak?
Yeah.
What you're doing, you look like Yosemite Sam.
I should have, but I was, I had to ask the club for like, can somebody hang out? Because
That's scary.
They didn't like me. The people at the club didn't like me either. So it always makes it difficult.
Yeah.
And I just ended up staying there until like way later.
Oh, no.
Meaning just waiting for like an hour and a half until, you know,
everyone would disperse.
And just hanging out and having drinks until I felt it was safe to go back to the comedy condo.
And nothing happened, I hope.
No, nothing happened. No, it was a empty threat.
Did you go to the Ruth's Chris Steakhouse? I don't know if it was there at the time.
It wasn't, but I did go to what was there. It was a gas station that I had a Slim Jim.
Yeah, fair enough. Super long or regular size?
Regular size.
Yeah. Well, you were just starting out. You couldn't indulge in the that's a terrifying story.
Do you know when I was?
I've never experienced anything like that.
Oh, I've had a number of those kind of.
Oh, I'm not surprised. But
I've had a number of like, oh shit, I'm gonna.
But I've never worked in a comedy club. Meaning.
Oh well, that's
you know what I mean?
Where that stuff happens. Yeah.
I just waltz into humorist rooms. You know.
Right.
Where everyone already
writing
knows.
Salons.
Yeah. Everyone is in the theater already knows, like, okay, now don't expect to laugh too hard.
Oh.
But you will enjoy some wry chuckles.
Here comes the NPR experience.
Exactly so.
Get ready to mildly chuckle under your breath four times. It's like the Garrison Keillor of stand-up.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I was the Garrison Keillor of...
You're the homespun, folksy, down-to-earth...
Garrison Keillor of Luna Lounge. That's what I was reaching for.
Yeah. Did you ever do Luna Lounge?
Well, that's how I kind of started getting into comedy at all, really. At least performed comedy was because of Naomi and... What's his name? Who were doing Eating It.
Mm-hmm.
Then did a spinoff of literary humor, quote. I mean, I hope that your listeners can hear the... huge gust of wind from my air quotes.
Yeah.
Literary humor. I guess there are air quotes there. It's exactly what it was. It was like me and Sarah Vowell and Sarah Thayer.
Well, that's three funny, interesting people.
Yeah, reading our pieces. You know what I mean? So Eating It was the big showcase of alternative stand-up comedy at Luna Lounge.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I miss those days. I miss that room. God, it was
incredible. That was incredible. And there, I mean, there's got to be something like it now, I guess.
Yeah,
but just, you know, I'm not in that scene.
I mean, well, Joe and Aparna and Maeve have their show, Butterboy, and there's all kinds of shows like that.
Yeah.
In LA.
That was the first time I ever did my imitation right. of stand-up comedy.
But you would read stuff you had written.
Yeah, kind of absurdist
right.
comedy, meta, really meta comedy. I had been writing for McSweeney's.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of towards the end of my career as a literary agent in the late 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
And I had already started writing for magazines. And basically, I was just like, I'm not happy writing for... I'm not happy tricking these authors into letting me represent them. They deserve actual representation.
Right.
And I deserve to try my hand at actually making things. So that's what was
happening. And then you were writing. And you continued to write.
But that was an uncomfortable transition, like getting into very cold water.
I learned what surviving. A cairn was from your book.
Yeah. And I didn't realize how controversial they are.
Oh, because you're taking nature and...
Yeah. Like...
And it shouldn't
be joke in my book, Vacation Land, available wherever books are sold or at your local library or whatever.
Which is the book, a very good book.
Thank you very much.
Where I learned about cairns.
And cairns are like when you stack up stones.
Yeah.
On a beach, if it's a rocky beach like they have in Maine or maybe in a river.
Mm-hmm.
In Western Massachusetts, there would be the people would mysteriously stack these stones down by the riverside where people would go swimming. And it was very witchy and Blair Witchy and scary looking and cool. And the joke in the book is that I say to my friend Jonathan one day when we're visiting down there, like, maybe I should make a cairn, but I'm not sure it's allowed.
Mm-hmm.
And like literally my fear of confrontation was, I'm not sure it's legal to put a rock on top of another rock and maybe I'll get in trouble. And that's the joke. But it turns out I was right. A lot of people hate it.
Well, yes, the idea that you are
disturbing nature,
and which I think is a little silly.
Yeah,
I think it's a lot silly, actually. I mean, if everybody did it, sure,
right?
But then you'd have Cairn Beach, and that'd be its own thing.
That would be its own thing.
But
and you can't have everybody doing it, you know, like
well,
you, me, Vincent D'Onofrio, we're allowed.
Yeah. Well, we should be. We're celebrities.
Yeah.
I mean, we were all in Pitch Perfect 3. Oh.
Wow.
Right.
Jeez.
Oh, that's Vincent D'Onofrio was in Pitch Perfect 3, right?
I just had a feeling somehow.
Yeah.
Was he a tone hanger?
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I'm just now realizing your kids were in it as well.
Oh my goodness.
Oh well.
Oh, he was scouting.
He was scouting cigarettes. Yeah. Jonathan, do you have any questions?
Well, at the moment I extrude not. Do we want to do any of the other senses?
Nope.
Really?
Now here's something, every episode I do, I'm going to have, ask you a question from my daughter.
Great.
My daughter is six as of this taping, six, and I'm going to look up a question. I've over the past few months, I've been collecting them, and
you don't even want to ask me what my best smell was.
I'm sure. What's your best smell,
Mr. Belvedere's balls?
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Just
been waiting on that one.
Right. I didn't even did not occur to me. Thank you. I get it now.
Yeah.
I see the missed opportunity.
I just need to get in my jokes before I get extruded out of here.
Okay, where are...
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you this one. This is a pretty good one.
All right, I like it.
If Donald Trump found a lucky penny...
I don't do political material.
Okay, fine. Okay. All right, I'll just ask you this one.
No, I'll do the other one.
No.
All right.
No, I'll leave that for Janine. All right.
Yeah.
Is ice bad for you?
It can be if you're encased in it.
Okay. You want to expand on that?
Well, you don't want to freeze to death.
Right.
Though I think I would prefer to freeze to death than burn to death.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is ice bad for you? If it is really cold and you shape it into a dagger and someone stabs you with it, that's no good.
Mm-hmm. So that's one way it could be bad for you.
If it's ice in a ice cold drink and you drink it too fast, you can get a headache, bad headache for a little bit.
Right. So bad, but in a relative sense, not too bad.
They say you shouldn't chew on ice. It's bad for your teeth.
Is that true?
I've heard that somewhere along the line in my crazy 52 years on this whirling globe called Earth.
The world's a big blue marble.
Oh, I remember that one.
We see it from out there. The sun and moon declare our...
I don't something know all the words.
Yes, we... Oh, but we...
will never escape this earth, not in your lifetime or mine. All dreams of planetary exploration are science fiction. You will die on this big blue marble in the sky that you'll never reach.
Wow, cool.
I'd just like to send a message to the kids.
Sure.
Ice is dangerous if it's formed into a weapon or a stick.
Spear. I was going to go with
spear. More dangerous than fear. Ice is a madman with an ice pick. Leon Trotsky died that way.
Right through the temple.
Right through the temple.
Mm-hmm.
A fine guy, university inside
that of. That guy knew what he was doing.
Just, you know what? If I had to choose a way to go, burn to death or ice pick through the temple.
Ice pick through the temple, yeah.
Yeah, that'll take you right away.
Yep.
I hope that answers your daughter question.
I'll find out. I'll play it for her and see if she's satisfied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you're the host of this thing.
Yeah, yeah, I'm wrapping it up.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
Well, Jonathan, thank you so much. Again, this is my first recording. You may not be the first person.
No, I understand. And, you know, if I happen to be edited out of this episode, I'm familiar with the experience.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. And we could... It'll be up to AI. And
right, of course. Yeah.
So
put me in for ChatGPT.
Exactly.
Right.
So we will AI.
AI all of this.
All of that.
Right.
Yeah.
For sure.
And then, we'll try to, you know, de-age you a little bit and maybe
that's
get
fine.
Rid of some of the
bags under my eyes.
Under the eyes and tighten this up here.
And also most of the facial features.
Gone.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, gone.
Like maybe kind of just put Josh Gad in here instead. And
oh, that would. Emma, Josh Gad, make a note of that.
Yeah.
Josh Gad.
Yeah. And have him say completely different things
and
be really entertaining. And
maybe Emma, let's get Josh Gad in here and we'll replace this episode with Josh Gad.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, it's just, I've been doing a podcast for a long time. I've seen it happen and it's, you know,
do you want a copy of this?
What's that?
Would you like a copy of this?
I'm hoping that it's not even recorded.
We have a CCTV up there.
Oh, yeah. I would like a copy of this for my own personal collection so that I know that at least I took up some of your time.
Yeah, I'll get you a flash drive and we'll...
thumb drive, please, yeah, right?
Or thumb, yeah, sure.
That's what I term I use.
Okay, why?
Very technical.
How is thumb drive more technical than flash drive?
I have no idea.
I don't either.
Yeah.
Jonathan, thank you so much.
Davidson, the pleasure is mine. I always enjoy spending time with you.
We both have the pleasure. You don't have to sort of lay claim to it.
No, I want to own this pleasure.
All right. I don't get any.
I want to sit in this pleasure.
All right.
And own it.
And stew.
For the next hour.
All right, man.
By myself.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you very much.
Senses Working Overtime is a HeadGum podcast created and hosted by me, David Cross. The show is edited by Katie Skelton and engineered by Nicole Lyons with supervising producer Emma Foley. Thanks to Demi Druchin for our show art and Mark Rivers for our theme song. For more podcasts by HeadGum, visit HeadGum.com or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and maybe we'll read it on a future episode. I'm not going to do that. Thanks for listening.
That was a HeadGum podcast.
Hey guys, just announced a big show in Central Park on the Summer Stage, part of the Summer Stage series, called David Cross and Super Pals. That's going to be August 8th. It's going to be amazing. Got all kinds of really cool special guests. I know we got Bob Odenkirk, Sarah Silverman, Sean Patton, Fred Armisen, many, many, many more. Go to officialdavidcross.com. That'll have all the information for that. And the pre-sale it just went out, and the pre-sale code is FUNFUN. I believe it's all caps. FUNFUN. David Cross and Super Pals, August 8th, Central Park. Come down.